keep him waiting any longer. Straight to phone line we go. We welcome in from NBC Sports. It is Pierre McGuire. Pierre, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Steve. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre. Well, we just played you some of the comments there from Ray Ferraro, who was a guest on the station yesterday. And I'm going to go back to a question. And forgive me if I've asked you this in the past here. The NBA, in terms of how long a season's going to be possibly for the NHL, the NBA settled in on 72 games for a reason, because the way it works there, that was the fewest amount of games they could play to get all their media money. Is it game by game more so in the NHL, if you in the national level where you work, obviously in the States, Pierre, but generally speaking, regional, how does it work? Is there a threshold like that that matters in the NHL?
Good question. Don't know the answer to it. Don't work at that pay grade, so I don't really know how it works in the NHL, but I do know that it was really important last year for the NHL to get those playoffs in so that they could get their television money from the national holders, both in Canada and the United States. So I think there's obviously a mechanism that is in play. I just don't know how much involved the playoffs are. I don't know how much involved it is by game like the NBA is, but obviously the NBA is a little bit different in terms of the number's a lot different than what the NHL is.
Pierre, under any circumstance, without fans, the owners are going to lose money. Would it be accurate to say that most owners would favor, if we're going to have a season, less games the better? Let's just get a season on, get a playoff done, and let's try to move on to next year?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the owners. I don't think that's fair. I'm not an owner. I never have been. I wish I was, but I'm not. I don't have the financial wherewithal to do that. But I would say that that's something they have to look at. There's no question. I've been talking to you about this. Now all of a sudden it's become avant-garde to say that it doesn't look like we're starting January 1st. We've been talking about this since July, late July, early August. Just knew from being around the people in the bubble that this was going to be a very difficult enterprise for the league and for the ownership groups around the league to get something done by January 1st. They've given their very best effort. Hopefully it can work out, but I'm just not that optimistic that it will, and I haven't been for a long time. Sean, as you know, the players are not in an easy position either. Their careers are very, very short, and, you know, they did get compensated for all of last year, which is great for them. They still have to deal with escrow, which is not an easy thing to wrap your head around if you're a player, but it's part of something that they negotiated in with the owners in good faith. And for the owners, and this is not any secret, I think everybody knows that, we're not the NBA, we're not Major League Baseball, we're not the NFL in terms of TV money. If we don't have people in the building, the TV money does not make up for your budget. It just will not compensate you, and you will lose money as an owner. There won't be one ownership group in the league that will make money if there are no fans in the stands.
How concerning is it right now for the league and everybody involved trying to hammer out a season and how they're going to do that? What's happened in Vegas, that four players have tested positive, yeah. Family members have been involved. Frank Cervelli from TSN reporting it could be even more than that here. Yeah. And I don't think that could be a big surprise what's going on in the world right now, Pierre, but that certainly gets everybody's attention because the facility's open for players that are there to use it. It's not even like it's been full-on open for a regular camp yet, and yet it appears there's an outbreak.
Oh, no question. But here's one thing, just to be – and Frank does such a good job, Frank Cervelli reporting. He's really, really in tune. He's got amazing resources around the league. So if you wrote it, it's actual. It's factual. Here's the one thing. Tampa had an outbreak, too, before we went into the bubble. People forget that conveniently. And they found a way to win the Stanley Cup. So – it can be overcome. Is it easy to do? No, it's not. It's very difficult. And this is where it becomes dicey because you look at what's gone on. For instance, I'll use last weekend, Clemson versus Florida State. They had one positive test with Clemson, and the doctors from Florida State told people from Clemson, don't bother coming. We're not playing. We're not going to play you guys just because we're not taking a chance. Those are our medical protocols. And that's where it becomes a little bit different in pro sports because you're not just playing one game a week. Based on the way the schedule would set up, you'd be playing more than one game a week. And then what happens? How do you set it all up if you're starting to cancel games every other day? It becomes very, very difficult for hockey, very difficult.
Should we resume? I know it was not easy life in the bubble. Pierre, you were there from start to finish, but this is going to, in immersing with natural society like the NFL, it's going to take a lot of discipline from the players to pull this through if the National Hockey League starts.
Oh, well said, and I agree with that, Sean. You know, the thing to me, again, we were in the bubble, and so everybody had to stay there and live by the protocols. And again, I can't say enough just how proud I was of everybody that was there, because it was not easy. It was a very different and difficult way to live, but everybody lived by the rules, and everything went seamlessly. It won't be the same if we don't have a bubble environment. It just becomes different. There's too much temptation. There's too much exposure to the outside world. Everything is different. It's really different. And so that's where you wonder just how legitimate it could be, or whether it could function or not, based on where we are right now without the vaccines.
All right, enough of that for now, because we got some actual tangible news, multiple interesting little tidbits of news that came in since the last time we spoke. Let's start with Kendall Coyne Schofield getting hired by the Chicago Blackhawks in a player development role. Your thoughts?
She's already worked for the organization there, so they know Kendall really well. Obviously, one of the best skaters that's ever played in the women's game, and maybe one of the best skaters that would have ever played in the men's game. And she's a phenomenal skater. She was a great college player at Northeastern University. She's paid her dues. There's no question. She's been around pro sports, not just in hockey, but in football. Her husband played in the NFL and plays in the NFL. So, I mean, you look at it, there's a lot there. She's a Chicago lady. She's from Chicago or just outside of Chicago. So she's very familiar with the situation. It's a great opportunity for Kendall. I'm happy for her. You know, Chicago's going to have to grow through young players. There's no question about it. So they're trying to add as many development people as they can, and I think Kendall will help them.
Pierre, with the growth of hockey in North America on the women's side, especially in Canada and the United States, do you also see down the road, and I know overall NHL is trying to be a little bit more diverse, but at the same time, for the level of the women's game, do you not see where we've got at some point here, see more scouts, see more people in management, and see more people maybe even on coaching staffs?
Well, they're trying. I mean, they're definitely trying all around. It's the NBA's done it, I think, very successfully. NFL now has, you know, female officials working, which is amazing to me, just because of how vicious it is, the sport, and how the women have handled it. They've done a great job with it. So I could see it evolving in a lot of different ways. I could see it with women officials. I could see it with, scouts. I could see it with development coaches like we see right now. So I think there's a lot potential there. You know, Cammy Granato is going to work for the Kraken in Seattle as a pro scout. There's a lot of opportunity. I think eventually there'll be a lot of opportunity. But first and foremost, and I mean this because I have so many young people that send me notes and ask for help trying to get jobs in professional hockey. First and foremost, we got to get through this budgetary crisis that is the COVID situation, because a lot of these teams just can't hire right now. But once everything gets full up and running, I could see many opportunities for women to get involved in the NHL.
The Winnipeg Jets have made a hire, and I guess the angle, the question to ask on this, how difficult is it to coach your son at all? I think everybody listening maybe has experienced this at some level growing up playing sports. What about the National Hockey League? Dad's on the coaching staff, and that's now the situation with Dave Lowry being hired by the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that big a deal. Paul Maurice is still the boss there, and Jamie Compon does a lot with the forwards there. I saw that. Yes, I'm really happy for Dave. He's a good person. He's a good coach. He was a very good hockey player. He's paid his dues. He's got a wealth of experience, both at Major Junior, at the World Junior, you know, as an assistant in the NHL, as a head coach in Major Junior. So, I mean, he's got a lot of experience. His son's a good player. Adam's a good player. He's a useful player as long as the role is correct for him. He's a third-line player in the league, more of a shutdown, penalty-killing type of a guy, big body presence. So, I don't see that being an issue for them. They've both been around a long time now. And Dave gets it. He knows what it's about to be a pro hockey player.
Pierre, I think of this with Elaine Vigneault and Bruce Cassidy. You reach the summit. You come all the way down back to junior hockey, now back up. How much an appreciation would Dave Lowry have from being an NHL coach with a couple of teams? Not that the Western Hockey League is not a good job, but it's on the old bus. Big difference getting on the old charter. He's got to be real excited.
Oh, it's a totally different environment, absolutely. I mean, I'll never forget leaving an NHL situation and going down and coaching the East Coast League for a year. I loved it. I thought it was great. But you're talking 16, 17-hour bus rides. You're talking about, you know, $35 a day per diem money per diem rather than, you know, $75 to $100 a day per diem. I mean, everything's just different.
Yeah.
That being said, you do appreciate it. There's no question about it. You appreciate it. And I think the biggest thing for Dave – hockey is hockey. You know, I read a great story about Rick Pitino, the legendary basketball coach, who's now the head coach at Iona. after spending 2 years coaching in Greece. And he was talking about, listen, we don't have the bells and whistles of when I coached at Providence or when I coached at Kentucky or when I coached at Louisville, where they competed and won national championships. But everything, once you get in the gym and the ball's on the court and the players are on the court, everything's the same. And he's right. He's 100% right about that. You know, the tactics are the same. The practices you run are the same. The intensity levels are the same. So I think for all coaches, no matter what level you're at, it's still a phenomenal experience. Everything's just a little bit easier. The pillows are softer at the NHL level. The food's a little bit warmer, and the travel's a lot easier.
You just made me think of the end of Hoosiers. Gene Hackman measures 10 feet from the rim down. It's the same key, boys. It's the same. Everything's the same here.
You know what? Just for a hockey step there, Steve, I love the fact you brought that up. I'll never forget in 1991, Pittsburgh was playing Boston in the old Boston Garden, and was going into Game 3. And all the media was talking about is how the skillful Pittsburgh Penguin forwards were going to get shut down in that little tiny bandbox called the Boston Garden. So what Bob Johnson, the legendary coach, did, I'm not kidding you, I was there, he brought out a tape measure, and he measured between the two blue lines. And he said, exactly the same size as our ring, fellas, let's get after it. And it got everybody's attention. Just that little visual right there was amazing. It really was.
And looking at that neutral zone, Pierre, I think he was lying. And as far as Boston, I'm not so sure on that one. On Rick Pitino, I thought you were going to go down the Celtic speech about everybody coming through the door. We'll go in a different direction. When you kind of look at this big picture, as far as anything at the grassroots level, college, to kind of forward progress in the United States, everybody usually kicks off hockey in the United States after American Thanksgiving. How fearful is kind of society for this to go to a completely different level in a negative way as we approach the biggest holiday of the American calendar?
Well, it's a great point. I can just tell you the state that I live in Connecticut, all hockey was stopped on Monday, yesterday, and it will not start again until January, and that's if everything's okay. They're not allowing in New England cross-border travel, so if you live in Massachusetts and you're supposed to play a team from New Hampshire, you're not doing that. And it's the same thing if you're in New Hampshire and you want to play a team from Maine, you're not doing that. So it's an issue just in the Northeast. I can't speak to the rest of the country. I can speak to some teams in the USHL where they've had major issues with COVID. I know a family who's got a son out playing in the USHL, but the son tested positive yesterday. And you know, he was still practicing and playing with his team. So now what happens with that team? I know of another team where a player got an infection and they were on the bus and all of a sudden the team got infected. So it's an issue and they're paying very close attention to it in all these different situations, whether it's the North American Hockey League, the USHL, prep school hockey's not slated to start. This is a time when they have their Christmas tournaments coming up after U.S. Thanksgiving. None of those are happening. So it's really a difficult time. No question about it, John.
Back to a little piece of NHL news again, and I'll ask this question. Where do you see Jake DeBrus settling in as a player? 24 years old. He had 27 goals a couple of years ago, 19 in the shortened season last year. Gets a two-year deal for 3.6 and change, so he'll still be an RFA at the end of it. Where do you see Jake as a player when he kind of settles in and this is who he is? Is he there now?
He's a really solid player. I don't know why there's been some negativity around him from the media. I don't understand that because every game I've ever done, and I do a lot of Bruins games, Jake's been fantastic. I'll never forget a couple of years ago in the Toronto series where Jake was a gigantic player for them, especially in the deciding game. That's when Mike Babcock was actually coaching the team, and he was playing a matchup game at the time. So, no, I think Jake is probably a 20 to 28 goal scorer somewhere in there. I don't know if 30 is going to be an every-year thing for him, but I think he can be close. He was a really good player. I don't know if Sean was scouting at the time, but when he played in Swift Current, he was an outstanding point producer in Swift Current in major junior hockey. So I see him being a 20 to 28, 27 goal scorer. Really consistent player offensively.
And you also look at that, Pierre. That top line may be the best in hockey. David Krejci's decent, but not the same player. Is it also quite simply that a lot of the cookies and a lot of the, hey, that top line is loaded up. If you put Jake DeBrusk with Bergeron and Pasternak or Matt Marchand, his numbers are going to be that much better.
Well, they are. I agree with that. But you only have so many people that you can put in the lineup. And the Bruins are going to go through a little bit of an interesting time here because most of their elite players are getting older. There's no question. They still got some very good depth and defense, even though, you know, Krug has moved on and Chara, we're waiting to see whether he'll sign back or not with them. But, you know, you still look at it, and they've got with Carlo and with McAvoy and Grizzlick, they've still got more than enough depth back there, waiting to hear on what happens with Kevin Miller and whether he can bounce back or not. But the Bruins are going to go through an interesting time here, and this is going to be a very good test for their scouting staff and for Donnie Sweeney because, you know, we'll see. Last summer, this past draft, so it wasn't in the summer, it was actually in the fall, there are a lot of question marks about whether the Bruins did the right thing or not with their draft picks, and we'll see. We'll see long term, but they're not overly stacked with a ton of players, and so that's going to be the interesting thing to watch long-term with the Bruins.
Now, I see very little, if nothing, in their system, Pierre, and quite simply, Rask has a year left in his contract. Now, I know the fans hate him. He is one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League. When you're talking about Stanley Cup aspirations, that back end might be serviceable. We're not talking any star power, and beyond the big three up front, boy, oh boy, it's hard. Again, I know you see them a ton, serviceable guys, but not the star power we're talking about winning Stanley Cups.
No, but Charlie, give Charlie McAvoy some credit.
Yeah, for sure.
Charlie's got a chance to be a star player in the league. He really does. Brandon Carlo is going to be a top four defenseman on virtually any team in the league, but he's not a star. I would agree with that. And Grizzlick, if he's playing 4, 5, or 6 in your defense, that's a real good 4, 5, or 6. He's probably better in a 5, 6 role. But again, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that one of the things that steer the Bruins, and Sean and Steve, you both know this, their power play has been so effective for so long. What does Torrey Krug moving on mean to that power play? Because he could really settle it down. And up top, he took so much pressure off of the guys down low, and that opened it up for Pasternak, and that opened it up for Marchand and Bergeron. That power play just so darn effective, but Krug was a big part of it.
Well, and speaking of, well, we don't know when some of those guys are going to be available with the surgeries that they've had here whenever gets underway in January. So it could be very interesting in a shortened season for the Bruins. Last one from me, and we touched on this. It started with the Blake Snell conversation, the pitcher for the Rays. Story comes out that they'd like to move him, and the real reason is it's money. They lost so much money, the Rays did, because of how the season had to get off the ground, and everybody took a bath in pro sports, as we know. And I'm going to say, segue into hockey here. Whenever we get the plan as to when the season can start, will that be renewed in the rumor mill about teams that like would like to move players that we wouldn't even think about would be movable or moving, but then it takes two to tango? Who wants to take money on? Can we start to see that again crop up in the NHL once we get a plan in place?
I think so, but I would say this. I do think there's some teams that are very secure financially, and so look for those teams to be purchasers rather than sellers. But, again, we have the cap, which is kind of a hidden stop for some of these situations. So we'll see. But I do think eventually that could happen. There's no question that I think that's a feasible way of potentially doing business in the league.
All right, we'll leave it there for today. Look forward to our visit again tomorrow morning. Thanks, Pierre.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.